welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, November 25th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 78. No, I'm not a special guest host. I am Rob. You see, I'm sick right now. And because Jason is a merciless taskmaster, he wouldn't let me skip recording this week. Thanks a lot, jerk face.
Yeah, I did offer to do the intro, though.
Yeah.
And you said no. I thought you were just going to say Jason wouldn't do the intro, which you know I will. We can't skip recording, man. People count on us.
Because we promise our listeners
we do.
That we will have a new show every week, and we have never broken that promise, even when my computer exploded.
Yeah. No, we've
more than a year ago.
Yeah. The good news is, to show the dedication we have, it's Friday night we're recording.
Yeah.
So you're hearing an episode that published less than 48 hours after we recorded it.
Coincidentally, we normally record on Tuesdays, and we say, hey, let's not record tonight because I'm feeling crappy. Guess what? I feel worse today.
Yeah, I know.
So kind of wish we'd done this on Tuesday.
You didn't feel good, and you hadn't had power for the whole
weekend. Right, yeah.
So
The big storm of the century that tore through all these Midwestern states hit us here in Michigan. Christine and I were out without power for about 2.5 days.
What's funny is, like, you guys lose power way more than I do. I used to lose power a lot more. So we bought this big fancy generator that, like, turns on as soon as the power turns off. Like, we don't have to do anything. Right. We don't even have to refill it because it runs off natural gas.
Yeah.
We, like, rarely lose power now. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, we probably go out maybe 2-3 times a year. But usually it's never this long. I mean, usually we're out for half a day.
Yeah, this was just really tough.
It was a pretty severe storm.
I think you lose internet more than you lose power.
I lose internet all the time because our internet sucks.
Yeah, mine's not so terrible. So we've had several episodes of Something for Nothing where you are questionable at best.
Yeah. So we're having good times over here at Poorly Designed Studios. How's it going, man?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I noticed there's a collection of coffee cups that I've left hidden on the side of your desk. Not hidden on purpose, just in a spot that's out of your eye line for the most part.
Right. When I come in here, I don't look at where you sit.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a bug flying around here. So if occasionally we suddenly just kind of stop talking and there's an odd silence, it's because we're watching the moth fluttering around between our faces.
Yeah. Good times.
I guess I could try and kill it, but that'd be less funny. And kind of brutal. I don't know.
It would be.
Is that, I'm kind of.
If there's any like PETA listeners to our show, they might be upset.
They might.
That no moths were harmed in the filming of this, making of this podcast.
There might be one later. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, unless it happens after the podcast or when we're on a break, it's going to be okay.
All right. We made a new friend recently.
We did.
Yeah. Well, we made two new friends. Yeah. We met Nate and Jamie, right?
Yep. His wife, Jamie. Yep.
Nate and Jamie Darty. They came up here. I guess they had some friends or family to see up at Grand Rapids, Michigan. They're from St. Louis, and they stopped by Kalamazoo to have breakfast with us and hang out, and we had an awesome time meeting them. So,
super fun.
Super fun. Nate and Jamie, it was a pleasure, and we had a lot of fun, and I'm very sorry. I need to explain something, to apologize to them for poor planning on my part. You see, last time we had some friends come to visit was Chris and Suzanne Zinsley.
Yep.
We had met them in just kind of one of the main shopping areas south of downtown. And, you know, and that's not really seeing the best of Kalamazoo.
Right.
You know?
It's just a coffee shop I frequent. Right. Yeah. So I always suggest that.
Right. So for Nate and Jamie, I suggested to them, hey, you know, why don't we meet downtown Kalamazoo? You know, you can kind of see the metropolis that is Kalamazoo.
Yes, metropolis.
Yeah. And they loved that idea. So we went to a little mom and pop diner for breakfast. What I didn't know is that it was Christmas parade weekend in Kalamazoo.
In your defense for not knowing that. Well, okay, first of all, not in your defense. You literally live 2 miles from there.
Yeah.
I live in another town, so I'm out of
that.
That
either,
but it was November 8th.
Yeah.
Was it? I think it was, or maybe 11th. It was
something like that.
It was early November. So the holiday parade featuring Santa Claus was a little early.
It's pretty dumb, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so parking was terrible, and the thing is that they had to get. I mean, we had an awesome time at breakfast, and we were kind of stuck at the restaurant because the roads were closed for the parade.
Right.
We couldn't leave until that was done. But we had a great time. But then they had to get up to Grand Rapids by a certain time to check into a hotel and then go to a wedding. And I'm not sure if they made it.
Yeah, I hope they made it because
we haven't heard from them.
So what happened was you got stuck in another parking garage, which turned out to be very fortuitous for you. We got the main parking garage, and they were a few floors below me, but I started on level 7. It took me over an hour to get out of the garage. Yeah.
So I feel really bad for them. I hope they made it to the wedding on time. And Nate and Jamie, if you didn't, I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel terrible about that.
So.
But so.
I'm sure that was fine. They had plenty of time.
Yeah.
Probably.
I hope so. Yeah. So, but while we were hanging out with them, we got to play a couple of Nate's prototypes.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Which were really good. We played a speed game called, I think it was S'mores?
Yeah, I believe it was called S'mores. In the game, you were trying to make s'mores.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. Like, mm-hmm. it was like a casual speed game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, it reminded me of like a Tessin with less stress.
Yeah, because you're making s'mores.
Yeah, because you're making s'mores.
Yeah.
But it's also mean, because like, you can break people's graham crackers and stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was fun. I liked it a lot. I mean, I said a million times on the show that I don't do well with speed games. That said, I mean, I love the crap out of Tessin, and this was fun. It kind of being kind of low stakes, that kind of helped me enjoy it a little bit more, because I didn't feel quite so bad when I lost.
Well, it was funny, because I played against Nate.
Yeah.
I don't know if I won or lost, but
I remember.
You played against Jamie, and I was paying attention to you, and you were doing pretty well. And I'm like, yeah.
I thought so.
And all of a sudden, it was like she just stopped time. And went from having 0 to having 3.
To being, yeah.
Like, she was like, nothing, and then she was like, done.
Right.
You're like, what?
Yeah, so the way the game is played, you have to make 3 complete s'mores. So you have to put down a graham cracker, you have to...
toast your marshmallows.
You have to put down a piece of chocolate, yep. And then you have to toast your marshmallow in the fire, and then when your marshmallow is toasted, then you can put that back on top of the chocolate, and then you have to put another graham cracker on top of that, and then you have a complete s'more. First person to get 3 of those done is the winner,
right.
Basically. Yeah.
And it was cool, because we were able to give some feedback and stuff, mm-hmm. and I think he liked some of our thoughts on it, so...
Yeah.
Which is always fun, because then you feel like you've done a good job as a fellow designer giving feedback.
Yeah. And the other one of his that we played was called Glasnost.
Yes.
And it was about politics in the Soviet Union, I think, as the Berlin Wall is falling, was my understanding.
I believe so, yeah. Or after.
Just after. And it was like a network building game, but kind of a secret network building game.
Yeah, his prototype was Manila Folders.
Yeah.
So you had like this map. This hex, not hex map, but like the square.
Yeah, a grid.
Grid, that's what I was looking for.
It's like a 4x4 grid.
Yeah. And you could close your folder of it, and you were playing cards onto your grid. And you could also play cards out that affected other people.
Right.
But playing those cards on that grid had arrows on them, which would direct you which way you could play the next card. And when you got to the end, you said Glasnost.
Right.
And then everybody got a turn.
Mm-hmm. Ticket to Ride style.
Yep.
You go one more time around.
Yep. And then... And you see who has the most points in a straight line.
Right. So whoever can build the longest path of I guess agents or connections within the Soviet government. It actually worked really well, and it was kind of exciting. I mean, I think it still seemed kind of early stages, so there's a lot of balancing that he had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the gameplay itself was fun and exciting. The one criticism that I have of it. Is that I worry that theme might be a little impenetrable for some people. I mean, it's very different than most games out there, which is good. You know, it's not just another fantasy game. It's not just another spy game. But I'm not sure that a lot of people are going to be as excited about Soviet politics.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, yeah, I certainly can see that. One of the things we talked about with, because it was a very, obviously, look-wise, it was a very rough prototype, just had arrows on it and stuff.
Sure.
And one of the things we had talked about with the theme was that he could add in some different icons and stuff to, like, instead of just having it be like an arrow sends you this way, actually using, like, symbols for connections. Like,
sure.
We'd even joked, like, one could be, like, the political sign, one could be, like, a bottle of vodka, and one could be something else. So the idea was that it was, like... politics, social, and this, and you connected things that way.
Yeah.
I think that dresses up that theme a bit more.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So
it was kind of text heavy as it is right now. So you're right. I mean,
he was working to streamline.
You're
some
right.
Of that.
So if you can clean that up with some symbols and that, you know, that would certainly help make it a little easier to get into.
You know, that's an interesting thing to think about, because that's something that he's a political scientist,
history buff.
So he's very into that. And I think about that with, you know, some of the themes we've thought of too, and how like we tend to pick things that we're really into.
Yeah.
But you do run into the risk then that what if it doesn't translate?
Yeah.
You know, in yeah, theme. Oh gosh. It's like a 4-hour discussion that we won't get into with theme.
That I think we've had a dozen times already.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. Anyway, you're right. We don't need to have that conversation. But yeah, no. But that anyway, they were both super fun games. Klaatsnos, I think, has a lot of potential.
Oh man, absolutely. Yeah.
I like the secret network or route building. You know, nobody else exactly knows what you're doing or how far you've gotten. You also decide when to end the game. As long as you have something in all four of your columns, you can end the game at any time, and you make that decision about ending the game. So I think that's a cool feature of it too. Adds a lot of player agency in the game, and you know, there's randomness of the cards that you end up getting, but by having you call the end of the game, it just kind of puts a lot more weight on the decisions you make leading up to that point. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I thought was also pretty cool about it was the fact that when I looked at the game, I thought this game's going to take a while to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not that I thought that was bad. I just was thinking that, like, when I looked at the game, I thought, this is going to be a longer game.
And it wasn't at all.
Not at all.
No,
it
no,
goes so fast.
Real fast, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, Nate and Jamie, thank you so much again for coming up to see us. You guys also were super kind enough to bring us some St. Louis beer, which, because of my sickness, we're not drinking right now. We wanted to wait until I have my taste buds back. Right now, I can't really taste anything. So, in a couple of weeks, we will try again. And
yes, we will.
I'm sorry, but we will certainly get to that. We promise. Just give us an excuse to talk about you guys more.
That's
in the coming weeks. So, thanks again, guys. If we can move on here, for our feature of the week here, I got an email from a listener, who kind of got me thinking about a topic. So I wanted to kind of mention the conversation that I had with him about that, and talk about where my head is right now, kind of what I'm thinking about. I got an email from James O'Connor. He's with Stellaris Games. He sent me an email about the Rumplebum Academy, which is available now, guys. You can get your own copy of the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking from the Game Crafter if you want to give that a try. It's only $10.99. So it's pretty cheap, as cheap as I can make it on there for you. And it is in the Game Crafter Micro Game Challenge. That is in community voting right now. After the submission deadline, they gave everybody 5 days to everybody who's a member of the Game Crafter community to vote for the top 20, and then it'll go to the judges to pick the final winner. And James had emailed me because his first game, which was Schrodinger's Wager, is also in the Micro Game Challenge. It's a game about Schrodinger's cat. You're familiar with that, Jason?
Please.
Okay, all right. Yes. Just making sure. Anybody who doesn't out there, it's a classic thought philosophy experiment. If you don't know about Schrodinger's cat, you should go to Wikipedia and do yourself a favor and read up on it. It's a fantastic and fun thought experiment. But so his game is kind of based on that, and about lab assistants betting on the outcome of the cat in the box, which is, I think it's a pretty funny idea.
It is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Especially considering if you know what the experiment is, know that there's no good wager on that.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's a really smart idea. And looking at their page on the Game Crafter, they had some really cool artwork. It was very kind of clinical and but also very funny. Big props to you guys, James, on that. And he had some nice stuff to say about the podcast. He said, I've been listening to your show for some time now and really enjoy it. It's been a part of my inspiration to become a game designer myself. As such, my partner and I have created Stellaris Games and Schrodinger's Wager is our first public release. So thanks for emailing us, James. And that got us into a conversation about that. They got me thinking here. Basically, one of the rules of the contest said that one of the limitations is that the cost of your game must be $11.99 or less. Mm-hmm. And I had listed Rumplebum for $10.99, and he had listed his for $14.99 on the store. And I was confused by that. And I said, well, hey, man, how if the rules say $11.99, what's the $14.99? Did I miss something?
And he said that he was confused by that too, because he'd seen some other stuff listed at $15. But after inquiring, it meant that the cost of the game, like the cost of manufacturing, must be $11.99 or less. But you can mark the price of the game up as high as you want.
Right.
And he felt like the $14.99 was a fair price for his game. And he said, now that you know that, Rob, are you going to raise the price of Rumplebum? And I kind of stopped and I thought about that. I thought, well, no. No, I really don't want to.
Right.
But I kind of had to think to myself, why don't I want to do that?
Why do I feel icky about that?
Yeah, why do I feel icky about wanting to make a little bit of money off this game? As it is, Rumplebum, I think the cost of it is like $10.35 for manufacturing. I rounded up to $10.99 because GameCrafter likes things at 99-cent intervals. After they take their cut, I get something like 40 cents in store credit per copy sold.
That is not cool, dude.
I don't care.
You're ripping off our listeners.
I know, but I mean, come on, they got to give me a chance. No, honestly, I do feel guilty about even that, about rounding it up at all.
If you know what? Mm-hmm. If you buy a copy of Rumplebum, we'll send you one of our BTG gun dice. That's available for the first 20 people that buy it.
Okay.
So that is worth 50 cents, there so you you've made your money back.
Okay. All right. I don't feel so guilty now. So that kind of got me thinking a lot about where we were when we started this project, started this podcast, and where we've gotten to today, and kind of how some of our goals have shifted and stuff.
Yeah.
So kind of my logic through on Rumplebum to begin this conversation here, now that I'm actually finally getting to the topic.
I know. TikTok, dude.
Considering how sick I am, I'm being awfully long-winded.
Delusional.
Yeah. Basically, I feel really guilty because it's been a year and a half since we started this, and only now finally do we have something, a real product that our listeners can right. have for their very own. And I feel terrible about that. And I think the reason I feel bad about that is because it's been very important to us, both of us, that we take you guys through the entire process of this, and we haven't done that until now,
right?
You know, and we've been trying to,
right? I mean, we've been trying. Obviously, yeah. I mean, Water Balloon Washout was on Kickstarter; it's going to come out, so that will be out there. So we've explored that part of the process. Ramblers, Gunslinger Ramblers,
we talked
was
about
with
week.
A publisher, like we talked about last week. And if you haven't listened to last week's episode, please go back and listen to that. This is the first avenue where we've actually succeeded in getting something to market.
Right. Something that our listeners out there can get for themselves. And because of that, because it's taking us so long, I feel bad asking for any money at all. Like, you know, and honestly,
let me just pay you to take my game.
Right. You know, because when we started this whole thing, we were both gung-ho, full on. Kickstarter, man. Kickstarter, that is free money to make our passion project. Why wouldn't we do that?
Right.
We'd be crazy if we didn't try. If we didn't try to do that. And then we started talking to other people as we started doing the podcast and meeting people. And we started hearing other opinions about that. And the first person who said anything about that to the contrary was when we talked to Ben Rossett. And his feeling was, no, I don't want to self-publish. I never want to self-publish.
Right.
I have no interest in that. And that was the first time we'd ever talked to anybody who had that feeling, or at least was so vocal and so direct about it. Mm-hmm. And that really kind of caught me off guard. And ever since then, I've remembered that he said that and thought a lot about that. And I've evolved to the point where I'm on his side of that. I don't want to self-publish because there's so much involved with that.
Well, and I think, so this is a little bit of a tangent, but it goes right along with what you're saying. I don't know what was in your mind, but when we started, I had at least the mindset of this, and this is completely ridiculous, but I had the mindset that if you publish enough games, like not yourself, but like if enough games are published of yours, you could just be a game designer.
Oh yeah.
Which is pretty much a joke.
Yeah, that's a dumb thought in hindsight.
So, totally. Yeah. But when you don't understand the landscape, when you're learning from scratch, you know, I mean, so, and shame on us for thinking that, but also how many other people have thought that when they come into this? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, I want to be a game designer to make a ton of money. It was, I want to be a game designer and I want to be a game designer, like full-time game designer, you know, which, as we've learned, you could do if you also want to publish all your stuff.
Yeah.
And you want to publish a lot of stuff that's very successful.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's a tough gig, man. It's a tough gig. So I personally have reached this point, and this happened to me sometime in the past year. I'm not exactly sure when. I can say when it was. It was after Gen Con this year, and after I went through all the stuff with the Cards Against Humanity Deathmatch.
Yeah.
When that was all said and done, and all the stress and the excitement of that was over, I kind of really, really thought through it all, and it hit me that I love this hobby. I really love this hobby, and everything that I've done for it and with it has really been personally rewarding and exciting and enjoyable, and nothing but fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but fun. And that's enough for me. I don't have any dreams anymore of making this my full-time career. I mean, if that were to happen, oh, holy cow, I hit the jackpot. But
right.
It's not going to happen.
Probably not.
It's not going to happen. I'm not going to design the next Settlers of Catan, you know?
And even if you did, I mean, realistically,
still, yeah,
you probably still have a day job.
Right.
I mean, and that's, it's crazy to think about that. Like, you could be a highly successful household name and still, you know, be...
Yeah.
Paying people's
taxes.
That's
okay. I mean, and so if all I ever do is put stuff up on GameCrafter for other people to buy if they want to, if that's as far as I ever get, I'm okay with that because the only thing that I would ever hope to get from other people is that somebody plays one of my games and has a good time with it.
Yeah. You know, and that's, so here's something that's a difference between you and me that's tough for me.
Yeah.
That's easier for you. You can say, I'm just going to put some games on GameCrafter. I'm going to make products that people would want to buy and put them on GameCrafter. Now, that doesn't just mean designing a game people want to play. If you're going to sell it on GameCrafter, I know you. You're like me.
Yeah.
You want to have it have good artwork. You want to have it be ready to go.
Of course.
You can do all that.
I can do some of that.
Well, I mean, look at Rumplebum. Rumplebum has nice artwork.
It has like a total of 8 pieces of artwork.
Right, right. But I mean, it has nice artwork. It has nice layout. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's something you do very well. That's awesome. For somebody like me, that's not going to happen.
Well,
so mm-hmm. For somebody like me, that's tough, right? Because like it's a setback.
Yeah,
like to know that like I have to pay someone to make mm-hmm. art. Because I could harass you to do it, but we're both trying to achieve the same thing. So it's stupid. It's counterproductive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To do that,
right? It's true. And I mean, there are art resources out there. I mean, we found a whole lot in our time doing this, but for stuff to be really made for your game, it's tough sometimes to just give it over to pre-existing works. You want something special and unique.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you 100% on that. Yeah. So I don't know if you have any other thoughts on kind of on this journey we've been on here.
Oh, you know, I mean, so much has changed. You know, for me, one of the things that's been tough is, you know, so this is something we actually haven't mentioned, but so I'm going to be going to Unpub 4.
Yeah.
Is it 4? Unpub 4? Yeah.
It's 4. Yep.
In Delaware in January.
Mm-hmm.
I had kind of talked about it, and my wife and I talked about it. I said, you know, I'm going. And she agreed, it sounds like a good idea to, you know, go out there. And so I want to bring a couple games with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become this excruciating decision of trying to figure out what to do for that. And I don't really have a lot of time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I have 2 games that I could bring. Like I have 1 game, like I could bring Sandbox Showdown as is. Like, take it, see if people like it. You know what I mean?
And it's a great game. And I think you should, cause it's ready to go. It's ready made. But anyway, go on.
Well,
you and I have already had this conversation, but yeah.
Right. I have Ramblers, which right now I kind of feel like I have to take because I got to sell that game. Like, I got to do something with that game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a game where if I eventually can't sell it, it might be something I just have to try and do on my own because I've invested the hard money in it already. So why not
try
to put it out there, you know?
Yeah.
I did the thing I don't want to have to do, which is prepay for all my artwork.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's tough. I think... For me, it comes down to a matter of time commitment, right?
Sure.
Like, and that's kind of why I'm highlighting that, because there's so many things we want to focus on, you know what I mean? And there's so little time to do that. So that makes it, you know, and I mean, things, as much as we love doing the show and as much as we love the co-op, those things take away from us being game designers sometimes.
Yeah.
They help us being game designers on one side. And on the other side, they take time away from that, right? Because you only have X amount of free time, and these are pieces of that free time.
Right.
And I don't feel like I'd be willing to make a trade for that. I like doing this. I like being out there in the community to try and help other people too. But it does limit your time, right? So you take a look at that time you have, and it's so hard for me now, as it wasn't for a while back then, to kind of figure out what do I, like, directionally wise, where do I want to go? You know what I mean? What do I want to do? Because part of you feels like, if you're not going to self-publish, and I know that I'm going to get razzed for this by some other designers, but I feel like you really do have to think about marketability in your games. If you, if selling games is something you would like to do, if you would like to sell a game and have it published by someone, I feel like marketability is a thing you need to think about. And that's just my opinion. And there are other people that are going to tell me I'm completely wrong, and your opinion is 100% valid. But that's my opinion. Like, when I think of a game and I think about wanting to put effort into it, for me, it's a balance of, do I love this game enough to want to do it? And in addition to that, would somebody ever be interested in this game? You know what I mean?
Sure.
So yeah, that's, I feel like I said a lot there, but didn't say much. I don't know. I feel like I rambled a bit, but
it's a very emotional episode tonight.
Well, that's just, I mean, that's kind of how I feel though. Like in the current status, I mean, sometimes I feel kind of defeated where we are at this point, with some of the things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, everything that we've put out there so far, we either have gotten rejection on or have no answer to yet.
Or had success and then it was false success.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, right. Hence, I was referring to ramblers there. So,
yeah.
So people are like, well, what are you talking about?
Right. And you know, and I mean, I've got the big unknown still of the deathmatch sitting here in front of me, which the last official announcement that was made was that it would unofficially, the show would be aired in October. And what is it? Oh, it's November 25th and still no end in sight, or no show in sight.
In their defense, this does sound like them.
Yeah, well,
they did a lot of putting off in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we've learned that the whole endeavor was not the most well-organized project. But yeah, so the rumor that I've heard from some of my other fellow contestants lately is that the show now probably won't air till February at the earliest. Yeah, and so we're all just kind of sitting here in limbo, and like some of those people, I don't want to know, because I, like I said, if I win, I'm going to self-publish Rocket Records because that's the prize, you know.
Right.
But if I don't win, then I, you know, I got other stuff I'm going to move on to. But if other people, if they're not going to win, they are still going to self-publish. You know what? They want to get their Kickstarter campaigns ready.
Right.
And now they're just kind of in a holding pattern, just waiting without knowing what to do, and that's got to be so much more frustrating for them than it is for me.
Right.
So, not to mention, I still have, all of course, concerns about if Rocket Records does win, I'm going to need to get a bunch of artwork done, and it's going to need to be done by Gen Con. Anyway, I don't mean to just complain all the time. So,
well, this is kind of a complainy episode.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, this is just kind of us talking for real about how we feel about some of this stuff. And
right.
It's, you know, I want to... Other game designers, you know, think about this too. Like, when I say we feel defeated, or at least I put words in your mouth, I feel defeated sometimes. Don't let that sway you, because I'm not going to let it sway me. I mean, I'm going to keep plugging away, and I may never get a game published, you know, on, other than on my own, right? But that's, you know, I mean, that's statistically speaking... That puts you not in the minority.
Yeah, right. So, all right. Well, you know what? This is what we're doing. We're doing a documentary podcast, right?
Right.
So we're documenting our frustration in this episode, I guess.
Right.
The fact that we all get discouraged sometimes.
Right.
And that we kind of get a little demoralized and a little worried about what are our goals here. So it's important for us to acknowledge that stuff and try and push through, because...
Right.
Because there's a reason we started doing this.
And I always remember the time when the first time we met Jeremiah Lee when he came on our show, and the kind of the words of wisdom he had, because one of the things that happened to him is what happened to me almost, which was
that's right.
Zombie in My Pocket just took off.
Exploded.
And was this huge thing. And then it was just nothing for him for a long time. You know, and I was afraid that might happen with me. And then it was actually worse, because my Zombie in My Pocket didn't get published.
Yeah,
so, you know, So that's, sometimes it's just hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
And it feels like, and this is probably just paying attention, like so many games are getting picked up right now by mm-hmm. publishers we know and we're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And so while you're excited about that, you're kind of like,
What are we doing wrong?
Well, not just that, but like, gosh, we got to get more games in front of more people. Like, we got to get that done, you know? Yeah. And again, it comes back to the time thing. Like, you're trying to get more games in front of more people.
Yeah, I can't go to as many events as those guys do to meet as many people. And
That, by the way, is amazing to me. How many people, like, are able to, not like publishers, because, of course, you should go to all those events. But, like,
but how many designers go to everything?
Yeah, and that's great that they can do that.
I mean, I guess you have to if you're serious about it. And maybe, you know what, maybe that's a big reason why neither one of us has been successful yet, is because we just haven't been able to go to as many events.
Right.
And you're doing better than I am, because you went to Origins this year and you're going to Unpub in January. So,
but I'm still going to way less than I feel like I should be going to.
Yeah, right. And I'm just basically going to Gen Con, and we went to Grand Con this year. So.
Right. Which was a really good place to go.
Oh, it's fantastic. We loved it. Yeah. But yeah, at any rate, okay. So, all right. So to recap. We're both frustrated and demoralized, but we're plugging forward and we're hopeful and we're staying positive and we're remembering that we started doing this because we still like the process of game design.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you have to focus on.
Yeah.
Do you love designing games? Do you love talking about games? Do you love playing games? Because if those things are true, nothing should stop you from doing that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And I mean, I can say yes to all of those things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I often have to remind myself not to talk to my wife about game design because it just irritates her now, because I'm always talking about it.
Yeah.
And I'm always saying, hey, what about a game about, and it just drives her crazy now.
My wife's the same way. Yeah. She's always nice and she listens, but I can tell she's just like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. So as long as I'm reminding myself not to talk to my wife about it, I think I'm probably still excited enough about it to keep going.
Right.
Okay, on to more cheerful subjects, huh?
Yeah.
More progressive stuff. You have a game to pitch tonight.
I do.
Yeah, do you have one ready?
I guess.
We could just move on to Twitter questions if you don't want to.
I do. No, I have a game ready. You know, I actually did it as of a few days ago. It's just been kind of a dry spell because I've been trying to focus on the things I have, kind of like I said about the Unpub thing, trying to figure out what the heck games I want to take to Unpub and, you know, yeah. So that's been kind of a thing, and so I haven't thought about a lot of new games lately. So a couple days ago I was just trying to think of an idea, like, I don't know, I do that sometimes, like I try to think of a cool name or a cool phrase and how I could, you know, and that a lot of times will spark my imagination and creativity for a game. And something that popped in my head was the term burning bridges, and not the literal term, like actually setting bridges on fire, but like burning bridges and like ruining relationships, right?
Sure.
And I thought, well, that's a sad topic. I wonder if I could make a game out of it.
It's a very depressing episode of Building the Game podcast tonight.
So I struggled with the theme on this one and what the theme would actually be. You know, my first thought was you were these like big criminal masterminds, right? Like real bad guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you were trying to, like, so, all right, I'm just saying words now. So here's kind of the...
It's our podcast. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah. So let's take two, even though you're not cutting this.
No,
so,
I'm not going to.
So it's actually take two. Everybody hears it. what I'm thinking is, I'm not sold on this theme. So you know what, I'm just going to go with kind of the theme I think I'm sold on, which is you're still evil geniuses, but you're actually like evil masterminds, right? Like comic book style villain masterminds, because that feels a little less mean. Like, so that's who you're playing. I'm not a huge fan of the idea that you're playing these like Scarface style, you know, criminal masterminds. I feel a little odd about that.
People who sell coke and murder people.
Yeah, like that feels a little weird to me as a theme.
You want to be a little more approachable.
So approachable, let's make it about supervillains, right?
Supervillains, sure.
Because, like, you know, you
comical can, mischief.
Well, the artwork could be kind of comic-y and stuff.
Yeah, I
so,
gotcha.
Okay. So the first part of the... So I was thinking about, like, a network-building game or, a road-building, network-building. Everybody should be familiar with that. Road-building is building roads. Duh, network building is like road building, except for using people or organizations or something
sure.
like that.
Yep.
So I thought first half of this game is you're both evil geniuses and you have a stack of tokens, maybe of multiple colors, let's say. And so you've got some like say one is like a loose relationship. One is like a medium relationship and one is you're tight with that person, right? Mm-hmm. Like you'll ask them to move a body and they're on your side.
It's like your bros.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe you only have, you know, of course you have a lot more of the white ones than you do of the red ones. Say if the white ones are the loose relationships, then you've got like blue for middle and then red for blood. Right.
Sure.
So,
red for blood.
But you've got like, you've got probably 25 of these to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And what you do is the board is laid out with people and organizations and, you know, that type of thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you take turns placing tokens on people, right? You're kind of claiming a relationship with them.
Okay.
Now, if I have a red token on someone, you can't be affiliated with them, right? Because we're competition. So if a dude is like my bro,
yeah,
he's not going to be friends with you. Right. Though that does kind of make me want to have one green token that you could do that with. And they would be like the, you know what I mean? Like they'd be
go
playing
on with
both
the game.
Sides.
Don't get distracted.
Let's add that. And I like
okay.
that. So you begin a game, you're placing out. Now, each one of those people would have a corresponding card you would pick up, right?
Yeah.
So you're almost deck building here, but it's real time. Like I lay it down, boom, I pick up that person or organization's card. I put it down in my face down. We okay. do that till we're out of things placed, mm-hmm. right? Then we pick up like a stack of some other type of cards, like actions, we'll say, things you can do.
Okay.
And we shuffle those all together. And at that point in the game, us evil geniuses who've built these huge networks of resources and such, right,
mm-hmm.
are now told that it's all about to crumble.
Mm.
SHIELD or the FBI or the CIA, someone is coming for you.
The Justice League.
Yeah, it's probably the Justice League.
It's probably.
Probably. I don't think they're coming for anyone.
No. And it's certainly not Justice Society. Screw those guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you hear they're coming for you.
Yeah.
And now it's time to be an isolationist. It's time to burn all the bridges.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get rid of all the people that are out there to help you. I mean, maybe you're gonna have them killed off, right?
Sure.
Or you're just gonna break ties with them. And I picture that the board actually has some chains where like having a relationship with one person automatically makes me have a tenuous relationship with someone else. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And there on the side of the board, there would be like a countdown thing where the agents are coming, right? So they're moving in. And you would actually have the ability to move those agents to different places on the board to kind of determine the chain they're going to take as they're coming down. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And when they get to one of those people, if you still have a relationship with them, depending on the strength of that relationship, they're going to be able to hurt you in some way.
Okay.
And at a certain point, you're out of the game when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And if it gets to the end, like if they get to you, because that's what they're doing. They're following the chain down to you, down this like web kind of. If they get to you, the first time they get to a person, the game ends, mm-hmm. right?
So there's got to be a whole lot of different paths that link to you. It's not just one.
Exactly.
Line.
Yeah. And there are some paths that are going to link to you no matter what.
Yeah.
Because you've done bad things, right?
Sure.
So they're going to find a way to link to you eventually.
Okay.
You know, kind of all roads will lead to you. It's just some are shorter and would give them, like, if they take this guy. Like, you've got, you know, if they take this guy, that means that, A, you lose their card, right?
Mm-hmm.
And B, maybe they get the, you know, that your opponent gets to do something to you. So the idea was on your turn, deck building style, you would draw your cards.
Mm-hmm.
There would be some actions there. There would be some people and organizations there. And you would have to decide what to do. I could play one of those cards, like this kingpin guy that I know. I can play his card. And he can help me do something because that's his ability, right?
Yeah.
But alternatively, if they're getting close to him, I can burn him, like, and boom.
Oh, and just destroy that connection. So you have to decide, you're choosing whether to use that connection or burn that connection.
Right.
And no matter what happens, they're going to get closer to you, but it's a matter of how quickly are they going to get closer to you.
And so one strategy for the game, you could say, I'll just burn all my cards, like burn all my connections.
Mm-hmm.
But then you literally have nothing, and your opponent has everything.
Right. And they can
just guide them straight to you.
Build new connections toward you. Okay.
So balancing wise, it would take some doing.
Yeah.
I think it has some similarities to Pompeii. Like, yeah. With the, but I picture the first half of the game being very fast.
Yeah, see, that's what I was going to say, that the setting that network up seems like that's almost part of game setup.
Yes, it's like Risk, right? It'd be like the beginning of Risk, just set all your pieces out and go.
Right, yeah, that's not, I mean, the main part of the game is burning. Yeah, your bridges.
And it's because I wanted to come up with the anti-network building game,
Oh, that's cool. So, okay, so you've got cards... So some of the cards in your deck are contacts that have some kind of ability to affect other contacts or something.
Right. Like maybe you could, you know, say one of the guys would allow you to, if there is, because I picture there would be like multiple agents or whatever coming, right? So one of the guys might be able to kill an agent, like who's getting close to him. That happens when you've got that card. Mm-hmm. Now that agent's going to go back to the start. You know, and he's moving down. Mm-hmm. And some of those action cards you would have would allow you to move the agents. You know, otherwise, I would say at the end of every turn, all the agents shift down. Like, you know, you basically take turns back and forth, moving them down.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, here's another way to think about it. Maybe you'd be forced, like some of those action cards forced you to move agents. So when I get those cards, I have to lay them down. All I have... two agent cards, so I have to move them, but I can choose which agents I move.
Oh, sure.
And where I move them.
Yeah.
But some of the masterminds, I mean, some of your connections might be able to turn an agent or force an agent to go somewhere else on the board.
Right.
Maybe it would allow you to hurt your opponent in some way.
Huh. Yeah, man, that's a really cool idea. Making that all work could be quite the challenge.
Yeah, I don't want to make this game at all.
So it's just a thought experiment, okay.
No. I mean, it would be a sweet game to prototype, but it would be a lot of time.
Man, that'd be a heck of a project. That would be a heck of a project.
Because you have to have this web, first of all, that makes sense, and then you have to assign all these variable powers to all these things, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking that you might be better off having like five different agent types or connection types. No, you'd have your right hand man, you'd have your fixer, you'd have your money guy, you'd have your brute, and then you'd have your lackey. You know, and instead of having 50 different named characters out there, you'd have a certain number of each type. I think you'd probably be better off doing it that way.
Right. Well, it's not that you would have to have 50 named characters out there, because if I just put down a minimal connection to someone, you can put one there too. There's like a field of maybe 30 people out there.
It's still a lot.
Oh, no, it's a ton. It's a terrible idea. It's a ton. But if you're going to do it as a deck builder or like as a mini deck builder, there has to be enough to support that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, another way to do it would be that you could...
Because if each player has 25 of those tokens to put down, four-player game, you need...
Well, four-player game, you would not use all 25.
Okay.
That would have to be the case.
Okay.
So, you would get, like, one red connection, two blues, maybe three blues, and, like, 10 of the other. So, now you've just, you've dropped... So, at that, you're at 14. So, now you've dropped 11 off. Another spin that could be done on this would be you've got the main network that they're coming after, and you have to play some tokens on that. But during the game, you can also buy more connections that are face-up cards off to the side.
Okay.
But there has to be a way to make it so you just don't automatically just want to burn all your guys from the board, right?
Yeah. So I'm thinking that... so this web that's laid out on the board, and they're instead of using red, blue, and white tokens for your placement, I think each player should have their own specific color, and there should be like a pre-printed solid red line that connects, and a pre-printed solid blue line, and a solid green line, and a solid yellow line. Okay.
Yeah.
So that
makes sense.
If all other connections are broken, the agents can still follow that unbreakable yellow, red, blue, green line.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That makes sense.
Yeah. So it seems like your task. Yeah. So maybe even those, there could be other like individual solid lines scattered elsewhere that, you know, no matter what, an agent can always follow a connection toward you from that guy to that guy.
Right.
You know?
And you could have junction points too, where like all four colors come off. So whoever gets to move that agent first is going to make the decision of which way they go.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. I wonder, maybe every time you could do it this way, every time you use an agent to do a power or to take, to use their ability or use a connection for their ability, maybe you have to put a cube there or something in your color. To say that, and every time you do something with it, with a character, with a connection, your bond with them becomes stronger, and so it's even harder then to burn.
Interesting. That's interesting. You could also make it so that you couldn't just choose to burn a character when you got them.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Stein's Legacy style, where like I have to have a burn card.
Yeah.
And that character.
Yeah.
That said, there'd have to be a way to store something, because otherwise that may never happen, right?
Be tough.
So.
Right. You'd have to have some kind of a queue or a staging thing to put that into.
What if?
Okay.
You had other tokens in front of you on the board. So say it's a four-player game, right? So four players, four sides. The agents start in the middle, right? Uh-huh. And are spreading to the edges where you are.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Okay.
That way, you could have a four-player game on the board, and it would make sense.
Sure.
So if it's working that way, you actually could have in front of you on the board, you could have like just one token with a sliding burn scale, right? Mm-hmm. And those are like the number of things you can burn. And whatever that number is, it's always going to be less than the number of connections you have.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So I know I have 10 connections on the board. Mm-hmm. I'm only ever going to be able to burn 5 of them.
Okay.
So when I have that card in my hand and I'm like, all right, this dude, I could use him to help myself, but they're getting really close. I'm going to spend a burn point.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you could earn more burn points throughout the game, but it would be tough to do.
Yeah.
Right. Require sacrifices.
Right.
That might be kind of cool. Because then when I just get the card in my hand, I can't just throw it away. I could, but only if I have the points. And when you get down to that last burn point, you're like, I've got two guys they're closing in on. I got to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, no, that's not bad. I mean, just the basic concept of a network burning game is a really good idea, though. And depending, no matter how you do it, I think it's an idea that's worth exploring.
Yeah, I think it could be kind of cool. I really like the name Burning Bridges. I think that's fun. Just because it has, you know, that cool kind of connotation.
Sure. Yeah, turnabout is always a good way to approach an idea. Taking a familiar concept and turning it 180 degrees. Anytime you can make that work, it's worth trying.
I agree.
Yeah.
So, cool. Thanks. Yeah. No, I'm. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fun idea to explore.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely, but we're running low on time.
We
have a couple Twitter questions here.
We do.
Let's see if I can get this up. First one we have here is from a gentleman at Luke P. Ski. Luke P. So at LukePSKI. He says, I do comics and graphic design. I'd love to collaborate with people in a similar boat, game designers just starting out. Are there any hot spots on the web, in person isn't likely, where I could meet potential collaborators? So it sounds like he is looking for someone to do some artwork for, which is cool. For places to meet people, you know, there are forums. You can go to BGG, boardgamegeek.com, you know, get involved in the community there, get involved in the GameCraft community. We'll get in touch with you and get your information onto the BTG co-op site.
Yep.
So people can look for you on there.
And Twitter, man, too, is a great
place. Twitter is the place. You're already on Twitter. That's how you got in touch with us.
People are always tweeting ideas about games, and if they're looking to make stuff and they're looking to get somebody to help them with it.
Yeah. Let's see. We also had a comment from a good friend of the show, Gray Dietrich, on our last episode, episode 77, where we talked about the whole Camp Blood idea. And he pointed us toward a Kickstarter that's going on right now. That kind of has the same vibe as this old slasher movie. It's called Camp Grizzly. I'm not sure when that Kickstarter campaign expires. It looks like it's kind of a neat game about campers and counselors getting hacked to pieces by a psycho killer, basically a Jason Voorhees stand-in.
Right.
It looked like a kind of a clever, neat game.
We also have a comment here from Tom Gerganis, where he linked to us a thing to check out for how to make a a battle box board based on some Google things. So
we'll be looking into that for sure.
That we will.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, because the battle box thing is something that sounds pretty fun to us.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, and we've got another comment here. It's a very long comment, so okay. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's pages long. I love when people write us long comments. We just end up not being able to read the whole thing. But it is from Thomas Stolle. I believe Thomas said he is from Austria.
Ooh.
And he was talking about, first of all, the Cube Tower game, which a couple people told us this was Shogun.
Shogun. Oh, okay, sure. Yep. That sounds right.
Which he said they also use that tower in a game called Wallenstein.
Wallenstein.
Which is basically the same game, but it's about the 30 Years' War.
Oh.
Which seems like an odd theme for a game.
Yeah.
But I guess Wallenstein was one of the generals in that army.
Okay.
In the fighting. So he said he also feels like we miss the easiest way for conflict resolution. In his opinion, it's not dice, but it comes from chess, which is simply the attacker wins.
Oh.
So, well, which is simple, but proven to be
right.
Not a bad thing.
Right.
Checkers, yeah. Same way.
Yeah, attacker wins, period.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So,
it's so simple, but he's absolutely right.
And he said that when you think about it, Small World is kind of an offshoot of that. Cause it's,
yeah, yeah.
You know.
Right.
You win for having more people.
Right. And if you don't have more people, you're just not even going to attack.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, So I thought that was some good comments. He actually talked a little bit about the battle box. And he did say, and I think this is very valid. He said, it's a cool idea, but you were talking about doing it as a miniatures war thing. And that was my suggestion specifically, because I like miniatures war games. And he said, miniatures people aren't going to be happy about that. They want to see miniatures.
Right,
they want to do more stuff. That's they want to be tactical.
Yeah.
And what you're giving them is not that.
They're
so
random shaking of a box.
Right, which is completely not tactical. now, granted, you would be deciding what you put in that box.
Right, right.
Based on decisions, which I would argue does give them some choices. But I also see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
So thank you for those comments, man.
Putting us in her place.
Yeah, you're correct. But I still think the battle box would be a fun thing to explore sometime.
Yeah.
Probably as a lighter fare rather than as a true like miniatures war game.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
cool. We should throw out a reminder that our contest is still going.
The cardboard arcade contest.
We're running out of time here.
We got 1 week left, guys.
1 week left,
only
guys.
1 week.
So yeah, so get on that cardboard arcade contest. If you go to ChevyDad.com, who's helping us co-sponsored, he's giving a game of Paper Route away, which is his original game designed for the cardboard arcade. All we want you to do is go to look at the cardboard arcade, come up with a game idea inspired by that of an old NES game, and send it over to us at buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
We've already gotten several awesome ones. We just got another one yesterday, I think. So
okay.
It's pretty exciting.
Cool.
So
yeah, that's going to be a fun contest. So the deadline is the end of November.
Yep.
And then in the beginning of December, Jason and Chevy and I will read through those and we'll pick the one that we think is the best. And Chevy will send them a copy of Paper Out.
Yes, he will.
And if you want a copy of Paper Out of your very own and you didn't enter the contest, or if you don't win the contest, you can get that on GameCrafter. Where you can also get a copy of the Rebel Bum Academy for bug-based baking. It's only $10.99. It's as cheap as I could make it, like we said before. I really, really, really would love it if you guys would give it a try. I need to take the time to get a print and play ready for that also. That's one of my goals, to have that out in a couple weeks.
It's a super fun game, too. So
yeah, it's good for kids. It's lightweight and easy to get into and easy to play. So give that a try, and we'll have links to all that stuff in the show notes so you guys can take a look at it for yourselves.
Awesome.
So, is that all we got?
I think that's all we got.
Okay, thanks once again, everybody, for listening to Building the Game. We appreciate it, as always. I hope that I did not destroy your ear holes too much with my horrible voice. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin, and I am @poorly_design. You can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and you can remember to check out the BTG Co-op site. That's btgco-op.com, and make sure you tune in every other week, every other Sunday, for our bi-weekly Something From Nothing video cast on Google+, where we hang out with other game designers and just talk about game design. It's a fun little show that we do. And of course, you can keep on coming back every week and hanging out with us, and that's all we got for tonight. And I'm gonna go probably dip my head into a bowl of orange juice and just try and absorb the vitamin C through every pore of my head. So that's all. Jason's not even paying attention because he didn't laugh at that.
Not even a little bit.
No. Good night. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Oral defecation.
Right.
That sounds disgusting.
Oh, delicious.